Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily and these days more than daily politics podcast. So we've come to the end of Labour conference a day early following the news that the Supreme Court has ruled Boris Johnson's proroguing of Parliament as unlawful. That meant that Jeremy Corbyn moved his speech to this afternoon, and I'm now joined by Stephen Bush, where we started conference together on a beach, we're now leaving it in a taxi. Stephen, watching Jeremy Corbyn's speech, what stood out to you?
So I guess two things which stood out to me. One, then it was essentially two speeches, right? There was the 20-minute speech that I thought he delivered very well on a topic that we know he's very fluent on and feels assured on, which is the Parliament's legitimate right to involve itself in the democratic process and the awfulness of Boris Johnson proroguing it. Then there was essentially the other speech, which was the speech that he had clearly planned to give tomorrow had the Supreme Court verdict not gone the way it did, which was, you know, very policy rich, includes a new initiative to introduce a state-backed producer of pharmaceuticals to get tougher on Big Pharma, and by my count, £500 billion worth of infrastructure and sort of development spending. So it was kind of a speech of not even so much two halves, I guess, because the conference speech was quite long. But I was quite struck by the fact, and seeing as he has had some great clips today, you know, the crowd spontaneously reacting to the knowledge of, to the news of the Supreme Court judgment, I was surprised that he decided to launch his policies on a day that he's not going to get much attention for them, and he's already sort of won the news cycle.
Yes, and there were rumours before the speech that he was planning to a much shorter speech. We were told 20 minutes. It definitely wasn't 20 minutes. And that he was holding back some of the policy announcements because you just aren't going to get the coverage or the pickup because all the papers tomorrow are going to be about what's happening with the government and this judgment. But I suppose looking at the wider themes of that speech, one of the things that really struck out to me was this idea of privilege and the people. And it seems to be one of the themes Jeremy Corbyn is now going on, which is this idea that the Tories are a party led by privileged people, by an old Etonian. And you have a situation where Labour want to pitch themselves as being on the side of the people, those who aren't born into privilege. You had Jeremy Corbyn talk about the fact that his party didn't just represent the 48% or the 52%, talking about the EU referendum result, but the 99%, the idea being that 1% of high earners or people born into immense wealth are not represented by this party. And it does seem to me, leaving Labour conference, we're currently driving down the pier, that one of the things that this conference has been almost this class war. It started with Andrew Fisher apparently saying in a memo when he quit Corbyn's office that he thought there was a class war. But if you look at the policy on what the members voted on abolishing private schools, it feels like this current direction the Labour Party is going under Jeremy Corbyn is much keener to almost highlight class differences where they can to political advantage. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, well, so their kind of tactical analysis is that the way you make Boris Johnson less politically effective is you basically say, you don't go, ooh, he's a special politician. You go, he's just another Tory. He's really quite posh. And therefore, that gets the bit of the Labour coalition which voted Leave, which they might otherwise have electoral difficulties with, that gets them to kind of return to their original party and to sort of Trump partisan loyalty. Now, of course, the flip side of that is David Cameron was able to do quite well in successive elections, despite also being incredibly posh. But of course, David Cameron's electoral coalition ran through affluent social liberals and people we would now think of as Remain voters who are not going to vote for Boris Johnson. So it may be that his poshness makes him more electorally vulnerable. And that's why they keep going on about it, because they really want to raise in voters' minds.
Now, the big issue from this morning, and I think Jeremy Corbyn benefited from it in many ways, is clearly the judgment of the Supreme Court. And you saw Jeremy Corbyn get up with a point of order on the conference stage and announce it and say the party wanted a general election. But it does seem as though there are still very, very many caveats when it comes to a general election, when it comes to what the party will go for. And speaking in his leader's speech, Jeremy Corbyn said they wanted an election once no deal had been taken off the table. Now, some Labour MPs now think it could be up to January when you get an election. I think there is a sense that it will be sooner than that if you speak to people higher up the chain. But Stephen, what do you think Jeremy Corbyn needs to see before his party backs a general election?
Well, for the extension to have been secured.
So is that past the 31st of October? Yeah, is that waiting until the 31st of October?
No, it's for Boris Johnson to have gone to Brussels, to have requested an extension, to have brought it back, and for Parliament to have voted it through. I kind of think actually there aren't that many caveats on what Labour are asking for. I think there's an open question about whether or not they're doing the best job of communicating their position. But their position, as with the Lib Dems and with the SNP, is essentially, OK, you can have your election, but we want our extension first.
But SNP today did appear to suggest that they might want it sooner, but though it's all semantics, saying seizing the moment, getting rid of this government. Do you think that it's sustainable for Jeremy Corbyn to push off this general election for a couple of weeks, perhaps? Do you think that's politically sustainable?
I don't think it is. I also crucially don't think he wants to. I think, yeah, essentially, right, so the kind of electoral interests of the four stop Brexit parties, I'm discounting the Soul Green MP for these purposes, right, so the SNP always need to have a position of Labour isn't strong enough, we're really strong. So they will always kind of hint and show a bit of leg that they might be willing to do it sooner. The Lib Dems know they have to be the we will stop Brexit, we won't risk a no deal. So it's easier and better for them to be more cautious about doing it until the extension is certain. Labour kind of has to make sure that it's not getting too far away from either of those parties to start being sort of zinged by one. But I just think that, you know, the feeling at the top of the Labour Party is they've been calling for an election for a long time. They want an election because they believe election broadcasting rules will help them turn it around. They are going to go for an election once that extension is in law.
And finally, we are about to get on a train. But looking back on your time at conference, Stephen, I was wondering, there's been lots of internal fights, lots of squabbling. There's been this sense that there's talk about who will succeed Jeremy Corbyn. It feels at times like this is a party preparing for defeat rather than victory. Do you think that Labour currently is a government in waiting?
I mean, in terms of its unity and a kind of sense of how some of its aspirations would actually be delivered as policy, no. However, the important sort of thing that this conference has reiterated is that Conservatives, for all their opinion polling, have serious problems as far as their electoral coalition's effectiveness under the first-past-the-post are concerned. They have serious problems in terms of the challenge of staying in office, having been in for quite a long time. And none of those problems have gone away. So just because Jeremy Corbyn doesn't look like he leads a government in waiting doesn't change the fact that he might well be leading a government in waiting.
Thank you, Stephen, and thank you for listening. We will be all back at Westminster tomorrow as Parliament returns. So do keep up then for all the latest twists and turns.